Rachel.
I'm Adrian.
And oh, how was your fucking weekend?
It was fantastic. Shut up, Sean Al.
I didn't realize we started. When did we start?
I literally hit the record button. Now okay. No one knows who this male voice.
Nobody knows who you guys are anyhow. Have you introduced yourselves? I forget. I am Sean Alf. I'm going to let you guys introduce me because apparently you've done some sort of background check and some research. So maybe you know more about me than I know about myself.
I came here to find out
who I am.
I'm going to plug our Patreon real quick. It's patreon.com/afteradult. Support us. You'll get an episode shout out. You'll get access to like special BTS and limited edition podcasts. Like I interviewed someone a few days ago and I did it on video. So there's going to be an actual video of an episode, well, technically kind of. Anyway, so it's patreon.com/afteradult. Support us. The money that we get from the Patreon goes to buying supplies for the podcast, maintaining all of our monthly expenses from like our podcast platform, from the platform I use to do this remote podcasting. And it also pays for my background check service I ran a background check on Mr. Sean Elf. It's a write-off. Yeah. I'm not going to invite people onto my virtual podcast without knowing how safe of a person you are. All I know is you're a burner, which means you could be anyone.
Yeah, really. There's all types of burners, so... And also, for anybody out there who wants to run a background check on me, that is my real name. So, you know, if you have the service, you can.
I was doubtful, but I tried. I just knew one. I knew that you are in LA. I know your name is Sean Elf, and I also know a couple places that you've lived before because we talked about Texas. Mm-hmm. And I found you. There is no other fucking Sean Elf.
There is not. I'm the only one.
You are the only one.
Not that common of a name.
Yeah, apparently not.
Yeah. Huh. Occasionally I'll get that question, like, is Alf a stage name? And I'm like, it just seems like it would be such a weird stage name.
I asked you that like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you did?
I was like, yeah, because I was thinking, I was like, is Alf his real name? Like, but why would he choose Alf?
Right, why would he choose Alf?
The 80s show.
I was about to say, yeah, you're a big fan of Alf.
Yeah. And... I get that. You have to know a lot of like anecdotes about that show when your name is Alf. Like,
Doesn't he eat cats?
He eats cats, and actually, this is one of my fun facts, that was a metaphor for heroin.
Oh, okay, cool.
So one of the writers, Jerry Stahl, who there's a movie about him called Permanent Midnight and also a book, and he was like a heroin addict, and he started writing for this TV show, Alf. And so if you watch in the show, like the alien, he always wants to eat the cat, but he can't eat the cat. And so that's like his heroine. Like he always wants to have it. And there's one episode where they like chain Alf up in a cage, which is sort of like rehab maybe. And he's like, no matter what I say, don't let me out of here. And he just wants to eat the cat. So yeah, now you know. Wow. It was a wholesome kids show, but there was also some dark shit happening.
Wholesome kids shows always throw dark shit in there.
Yeah. Although I always get, so when people learn my last name, they're always like, so... do you eat cats? I'm like, oh, yes. Yes, I eat cats.
Yeah, but do you eat pussy? That was my contribution, Rachel, for the whole podcast.
I'm out. It's not getting better than that. My
damn.
Job.
It's not getting better.
Rachel told a sex joke.
That's right.
I do eat Georgia Binks. Oh. She's behind me right now looking like a snack.
Nice. Okay, so tell me.
No, not in a sexual way, Rachel. What the fuck is that face? Rachel's making a very, very offended face.
Yeah, because I don't like it even in a non-sexual way. I don't like the idea of you eating Georgia Binks.
No, but have you heard of cute aggression? Is like, you know, when something's so fucking cute, you want to squeeze it until his eyes pop out.
No. Okay, got it.
And then consume it.
Of Mice of Men thing where like Lenny, he always has the small animals and he kills them because he pets them too much. That's like cool. You just want to own it.
Yeah, exactly. That's so, Sean, you're a writer.
I am.
You're a neat writer, as this podcast has assigned you the title.
So what did you find about me on this background search?
That you studied creative nonfiction. You have a master's degree in creative nonfiction.
I do. Wow.
Yeah.
That's more than most people figure out.
Which makes you a pretty legit writer, I would say.
You know, I also don't make that much money, so I feel like that also gives me credit as a writer.
Yeah, I mean,
you guys are also
make money
writers,
from it,
right? Rachel is fan fiction, and you...
It's true. <didn't...
laughs> Buttface McGee here, you used to do... isn't your major in
Wait, we talked about Buttface McGee before I hit record, so everyone listening won't know what that means, but just to our listeners, we use this remote platform, so we can see each other while we're recording, but it, like, assigns people random names when they log in, except I chose a name for myself, and I just typed in that my name is Buttface McGee, so there you go. Background story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rachel is discreet creative, and Sean is neat writer, which is just weird that it gave you that title randomly.
But I mean, Rachel's is fitting too, because she's discreet, she's anonymous, mm-hmm. but she...
That's very true.
It's true.
Yeah.
No one knows who
the
I
computer.
Am.
I trust the algorithms more than I trust myself. Like, it knows me better. I feel like in 10 years, there's going to be a dating profile thing that's just going to go through all your algorithms and be like, "You're really going to like this person. You're going to match up well."
That's,
I mean, it's
very,
sort of got that already. That Black Mirror.
Yeah. Very Black Mirror. Hang the DJ. That episode.
I mean, we're already at a place where if you go through the ads on Instagram, you're like, I do want this, whatever it is. And you end up looking at it and like, how did you know? I hate you. And it's just
like, yeah. Oh my God. It's true. I bought so many things from Instagram ads. It's
especially
shameful.
Right now, I feel like I've become more susceptible to Instagram ads because I'm just like, yes, I do really need this boob tape for when I finally get to leave the house again.
Right.
Boob tape?
Yeah, I bought some boob tape.
Like, you mean like the double-sided tape for like certain kinds of clothes, or?
Yeah, it's for like if you can't wear a bra with something.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
You boob tape it. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Bought that at 3 a.m.
Smart purchase.
Yeah,
I agree. It's really How's, smart.
How is self-isolation treating you, Sean?
Well, I thought we were going with exile for the good of the
world. Oh, yes. Sorry.
I like how you're like the only person we're ever going to invite to this podcast who actually has listened to this podcast.
Oh, yeah. I was running. And I listened to probably, I was doing backwards. So I probably got 6 or 7.
Nice. Down.
Yeah. I got past, like, before Christmas. It was like going back in time and seeing the world before Corona.
How that sounds exciting.
Yeah.
You know what it feels like? You know, when you're your last semester in college and you have all this stuff to do and you're like, you have all these finals, all these final projects, and you also have to plan your graduation party and you graduate, and then the day after, you're like, you don't have anything specific to do, and you're kind of like, oh, and now I have to figure out who I am,
what
I'm doing with the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I worked so much, it was go, 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 and I had no time to just stop and think. And now I'm kind of in this like post-work era of, all right, well, what do I do now? So that's how I feel, I guess.
Okay. So you mean you're not writing like the next great American novel?
Oh, well, I've been writing a few screenplays.
Okay.
Well, screenplays for porn. I don't know if I should call them screenplays, but I wrote 3 books and they all took me about 4 to 5 years to write and none of them are published. And it took so much of my life that I'm kind of in this space where I don't know if I want to start another project like that again, because it really kept me from doing other things too in a lot of ways. So I've been trying to only write stuff I know is going to get made. So even with screenplays, there was one I wrote on speculation, which was just kind of, it was something I had in my mind and I wanted to work on it, and I sent it in to the director I thought might like it, and he never really got back to me, so I assumed that one was just, you know, 40, 50 hours wasted. And then I did do another one for Joanna Angel for Burning Angel, but she said she wanted it. But she kind of, the way we write, her and I together, is she has certain ideas of what she wants to happen, and I figure out a way. I figure out all the details. So she's kind of like, you know how when somebody is like, I have this great idea for a book, but ideas are so cheap. I mean, nobody ever actually sits down and writes the book and makes it happen. So she has the ideas of what she wants to happen. And then I figure out how to make that happen with our budget, with the constraints of everything. So she was
like, I want to do something and call it Evil Tiki Babes. And they're going to be running a drug front, but they're also cannibals. And she was like, go nuts.
So we can actually, this might help explain the process of it. So that one, I believe, her prop guy, they were using this location, and this location had a tiki bar set up.
Okay.
So she contacts me and she's like, what can you do with a tiki bar? And so my mind starts thinking, okay, tiki bars are kind of related to cannibals. Because the history of them is like during World War II, people went overseas and they started having these different cocktail drinks, and then they brought those home. But also in the Pacific Islands, there's all this history of cannibalism. Like every story you read about, like Captain Cook's adventures and all the other people like exploring these islands, they're always afraid of cannibals. Even Herman Melville, his first book, Taipei, he jumped ship. He was on a whaling ship and he jumped ship in Taipei, and he would hung out with like one indigenous tribe, and they're like, we're fine, but the next tribe over, they're cannibals. And also, I always digress like this, but there's a book called In the Heart of the Sea, and these whalers, it was what Moby Dick was sort of based off of, they were 400 miles from an island, and they were like 2,000 miles from the mainland in like Brazil or whatever it was, and they chose to sail back home to Brazil at 2,000 miles instead of just going the 400 miles because they were afraid of cannibals on the island. But the irony is they ended up eating each other because they were starving to death. So they became
Oh my God.
Anyway, so that's where my mind went. Like, tiki bar is cannibals, and that kind of goes in line with her, you know, she likes funny murder horror stuff. And they also So I was like, okay, we can do something with that, and it'll be a cult. So it was originally called Cannibal Cult, which objectively is a much better title, but she sent me a text like this one day. She's like, hey, what other titles can we call it than Cannibal Cult? Because Adult Time didn't want to call it Cannibal Cult. So
which
we had,
is funny.
We had all of these other titles, and then she's like, fuck it, I'm just going to call it Evil Tiki Babes. And I'm like, okay. So that's how we got that title. but originally, going back to the writing of that, she had a watering trough for like what cattle would drink water out of. Mm-hmm. And they were using that kind of as a hot tub, I guess. And so in my mind, I was also like, that can be a cauldron where they boil bodies. So that was all written into it. And in fact, the opening sequence was supposed to be me as a pool boy straining bones out of the cauldron. But then I get there the morning of, and there's a huge leak in this hot tub. And the prop guy assured us, it'll be fine, it's going to work, it'll be great. And we get there, there's a huge leak, and everybody is just staring there looking at this leak growing, and nobody knows what to do. And so I'm not even paid as a PA that day, but I'm just getting buckets, and I'm doing bucket by bucket, and I'm dumping it in. They have this little shower. And it's probably about three times the size of a regular hot tub. And while everybody's just like, what are we doing? And so I empty it, we pull the cauldron thingy out of the scene, and then we have to come up with a whole new sequence to start it and a new way to do it, which was me mopping up the floor.
Yeah, I didn't realize that because we split the difference. I watched Evil Tiki Babes.
Okay. I watched Three Cheers for Satan, so yeah.
So it wasn't until you were like, I was on set that I was like, oh, you were the guy eating the bone.
Yeah.
The whole time
eating a bone. It was
oh my God.
That originally I written it as a turkey leg, but I went to the store and I was like, what can we use that's going to last for 2 days? Because I had to be having it for 2 days. And it had to look like something I could kill somebody with. And I found a dog bone. So I was actually chewing on a dog bone for, it was a cow femur.
Oh God. Yeah, it is like comically huge. It looks like something that, like Fred Flintstone would be
right
eating. Yeah. It's
we wanted something over the top. So
was that I did watch part of the third episode of Evil Tiki Babes.
Mm-hmm.
Is the bone the thing that you were, like, clubbing someone with?
Yes, that's what I...
That same bone?
Yeah.
Same oh, good bone. God. So it was a snack that became a murder weapon.
Right. It was just, you have to use everything, and it has to come mm-hmm. back around. So in the beginning...
But, you know, adult film sets, like, we run on low budgets.
Yes,
you can't buy two bones, one for snack and one for murder weapon.
Yeah. And that's actually one of, I think, the positives of when you're writing for porn is... economy. Like, so most of my scripts, I know the location and I know what rooms we have. So you'll have 2 days to shoot generally, and you have to make a 4-sex scene film work in that location and with minimal props. I think usually when I work with Jackie, we have $100 for props. So that can give me an idea of what we have to work with.
Do people bring stuff like from their house a lot? Just like, oh, I had this thing.
Yeah. Well, It mainly it's just Jackie and me because we don't trust anybody else to remember to bring anything.
That's fair.
Yeah, you'll tell people. I mean, we send out very detailed call sheets on like what clothes they need to bring. And I remember this one girl showed up, and she only had the panties that she was wearing at the time, and then she didn't have a matching bra and panty set. And I'm just like,
that's like a porn noob mistake. Was she new?
She was one of these women who comes in and out of the industry.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's surprising to me just because I'm like, what? It's literally your job. It's like going to, that's like being the kid who shows up to class and is like, never has a fucking pencil. And it's like, can I borrow a pencil? And it's like, you are literally in school.
Right. Right.
Why would you not show up here with a pencil?
Yeah. Go ahead, Rachel. What were you gonna say?
No, I was gonna, is it normal for the script writer to always be on set, or is it just that you have carved out this like niche for yourself where you're like, not only can I write, but I can also help make sure everything is smoothly run?
Yeah, it's more, I don't have a giant dick that wants to perform all the time, so I have to find all these other niches.
Are you saying if you did, then you would just be performing?
Yeah, no, if I could perform, I would just perform. Because, you know, making, I don't know, $500 to $800 a day for being on set half the time versus $200 for being on set from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would take that.
So how did you get into writing scripts for porn?
Yeah, I'm curious too.
So I have this problem where I see everything as connected. So I tell these stories where I go back and back. So I don't know how far back you want me
tangents
to go.
Well, tell us when you were a baby and if you had.
I was born.
It was
on a stormy night.
And I would also like you to break down which of Sigmund Freud's like developmental stages you felt that you're stuck in, whether it's
oral the anal phase.
Okay, anal phase. Got it.
Definitely have that anal phase.
Oh no.
And what caused
it's okay, same.
Yeah. No, recently, right? You just got into it.
What, butt sex?
Well, didn't you say like before I was listening to your podcast and you're like, now 50% of the time you like anal stimulation?
Yeah, so that's probably I've never disliked it. It's just that it's never been a thing that like worked well for my partner at the time to include in my life.
Right.
Until my partner now. So it's just become a very, very regular occurrence.
No. I think the first picture you ever sent me was you with a butt plug.
That sounds correct. Oh, yeah, we should play that game that I discussed, Rachel.
Oh, it's...
I'm going to, from now on, for whenever we have a guest on the podcast, Rachel has to... I'm not going to tell her beforehand, but she has to guess whether I've had sex with a guest or not.
I mean, I'm going to say yes.
This is like some Howard Stern shit.
I feel like we should hold off and tell her at the end.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. Just let the tension build.
So you think yes?
I think yes. Or you've at least sexted because you just said she sent you a picture.
Look, he fucking posted. Like, it's my birthday. Send me nudes.
This is true. Yeah. Although you sent me that butt plug picture after we met at XBiz.
Okay, that sounds appropriate also. I don't remember how many butt plug photos I send to who and when.
And who I sent them to. No, it was a funny picture because the whole thing was I wanted a funny picture for your profile because I'm more of a visual person, so I could.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Because you're like me, where you like get mad if you don't have like a contact photo for someone on your phone. Yeah, I hate it.
So, do you guys want to hear the story of how we
got married? Also, can you? I know this is like an inopportune time. I'll ask you to mention it again at the end of the podcast. But can you throw out your social media for people? Because I think people really should probably go look at your Instagram and see like the weird fucking BTS stuff you post while they're listening to this. Because it's a great accompaniment.
Sure. it's just my name for everything, for Twitter, for Instagram.
S-H-A-W-N.
Yes, S-H-A-W-N-A-L-F-F.
So, pretty simple.
Yeah.
Keep cool. It simple.
Okay, so I...
So how did you trip and fall into the porn industry? Because that's how everyone always, you know, like people always think that it's like, whoops, oopsie-daisy.
So my family, growing up, stories and movies were kind of how we always talked about the world and how we learned stuff. So I've always been like very into stories. I was dyslexic, or I still am, but so my mom forced me to read an hour a day. So I got into stories that way, but my dad literally loved movies. And to this day, we always watched movies. So I'd always wanted to be involved in creating stories. In high school, I took these film classes and I loved film. So I wanted to be in film. And in college, I tried to get into our film department at UT, but I'm not really good at on paper, and I'm also a slow developer, so I wasn't as good with resumes and all those things. So I think I applied to the film department like, I don't know, 6 times. I didn't get into it. I applied to a bunch of schools. English was the only one that had me, so I was like, I'm a commitment person, so I was like, I'm going to be a writer. Moved to Florida with, I guess, my fiance at the time. She was getting her PhD in marine biology, and so I decided to get my master's in creative writing because it's just like, why not? At that time, I also started working for a weekly alternative paper, so kind of like LA Weekly, but it was Creative Loafing in Tampa. And the reason do you know it? There's different branches in different cities. So. Yeah. I started working for them as like a promo guy. So I'd go to a lot of events and hand out stuff. But the reason I did it is because they wrote a column about their adventures every week. And so I started doing that to write and get published. And that was how I first got published. And I'm one of those people, like, if you just know me on paper, I'm not anything special, but I have charisma. I don't know what it is. In person, people really like me.
You do have good vibes.
So they started, their industry was dying, and they were starting to do a web-first model where they post everything online, then they post in the paper. So they were starting the sex and love section because that's what gets the most traffic. They needed somebody to write about it, and I was willing to write about it under my real name. So I became a sex and love writer.
And you had a lot of sex and love by that point in your life?
No, I had only slept with... So my fiance was the second person I ever slept with.
But you're like, hey guys, I'm the new sex writer. Right, I've had sex twice. Yeah.
But I was also like a curator. So I had swingers and BDSM people writing for me, sort of like, they were bloggers. I would always have to rewrite their stuff, but they would send in their stories. So it was all like a collective basically. And from that, I kind of started interviewing a lot more porn people. And this is 2009, I think I started. And I realized the more I wrote about porn, the more clicks my stories got. And I mean, they were probably just clicking for the pictures and all that and the name. But I also sort of realized a few things. One, that people were really fascinated by sex, really fascinated by porn, and they really wanted to know about it. Also, I've kind of lived my entire life by thinking about what would make for the best story. And porn always offered an interesting story because I got into a lot of weird situations. Like Night Moves is out in Tampa. And so I think the first event I went to was this pool party at a swingers nudist resort with a bunch of porn stars.
And, yeah, that sounds appropriate.
Right, right. So it was, porn was also one of those things, the more, it was the only thing people ever wanted to talk to me about, like my friends. And so I just eventually started writing more and more for it. Long story short, my relationship broke up. The paper was dying, and I kind of knew I'd eventually be laid off. So I moved to San Diego and was working at a bar at the time. And in San Diego, I was sort of using that because I knew I had a job there. I was still writing. I started writing more for AVN, XBiz, Fleshbot. And I started coming up and covering sets in LA. And through that, met Jackie St. James.
What year would that have been around?
I moved to LA about 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Okay, so this, because I'm like, because I know that I never hadn't heard of you or met you until just coming back into the industry, right. But I left in 2015, so like exactly 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's weird because I have technically sort of been kind of industry adjacent since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
But so I've seen a lot of the industry and I've seen a lot of people evolve. But I also haven't been as closely involved with the industry until like 2 or 3 years ago, I guess. So
okay,
what's been the most interesting evolution that you've seen?
There's a lot of stuff. I mean, the death sort of the contract performer, the rise of OnlyFans and content first, the death of like the big studios. I mean, because so when I got in, there was still Wicked was still kind of holding on.
And yeah.
I had Asakura, Jessica Drake, all those people. But now that's, I mean, Browser's actually starting with contract people again. So maybe.
Yeah. Well, they've announced like 8 contract people in the last couple of months. It's wild. Yeah. Like,
and I've heard one of their strategies is they're going to make all the best guy performers contract stars so nobody else can book them.
That's
the rumor I've heard. I don't know.
Worrisome.
Yeah. But it also.
But I mean, they'll do whatever they want. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's you gotta figure out a way. But it's, I don't know. It's like any other industry because there's a lot of parallels with the print industry, mm-hmm. in terms of changing and evolving. And I think that's the big thing. Like being in the writing world, you listen to a lot of people say like nobody reads books anymore, and I'm like, there are more people reading now than there ever have been. They're not reading in the same way. There are opportunities for writers. You just got to find them. And so for me, it's interesting because I'm one of the few MFA graduates that probably is making a living off my writing. Now, granted, I'm doing it in porn, but you just got to find a niche. And so for me, porn first and foremost offered an interesting story and an interesting life. And I think the goal had always been I'll eventually write, you know, the porn memoir. But so that's sort of what led me down. I have this theory that kind of the market dictates morality or dictates so many choices. And so the market was showing me that people are clicking more on stories about, you know, porn than anything else. So I was just also just kind of tired of, you know, spending 4 and 5 years on stuff that nobody would ever read or care about. So,
whew, as a not writer person, I mean, like I have the ability to form a sentence, but I don't have any aspirations of like writing fiction or anything right. Like that.
But I thought you wanted to start writing some scripts for your stuff. Didn't I hear that in one of your podcasts?
Oh, I absolutely do. But that's what I mean is like, that's something that I have to like, I don't even know where I would start with it. So it's, for me, it's more like I've actually asked my boyfriend who is a writer to like, I've been like, hey, could you like help me write something? Cause he actually has ideas in his brain.
See, I think the ideas, ideas are the easy part. Anybody can have ideas. It's just sitting down and doing it.
Just the sitting down and doing it specifically, especially now, because I like my hours are backwards and I'm just like.
Yeah. There's this one book called Bird by Bird, and it's like probably the most influential writing book. And I think what's so compelling about it is you can feel her pain in it. She's just like this broke woman and she's talking about writing and how to write. But this, I had to teach creative writing, and one of the stories I would always give him is her chapter called A Shitty First Draft. And it's basically how to get over the blank page. And it's just to allow it to be shitty. Just write, start. You just have to start and just go somewhere. And
then I'll read that book.
I will read it. I think.
Yeah, I had a create, because I went to art school and we did a lot of, there were people who, they were animators and they wanted to learn. So there were a lot of different creative writing classes that were offered. And sort of the best advice that I think our teacher gave was that whenever you're writing the first draft, you shouldn't be typing it on a computer and you shouldn't be writing it in like pencil, because either way you can delete stuff without, you're not allowing that like free flowing sort of progression. She was like, just write it on paper in ink. You can type it up later. Right. Just don't do it on your computer, because then you can just be like, this is shit, and delete.
Yeah. I think there's
which
that
would be me.
Hemingway quote that's write drunk, edit sober. And it's sort of the same. I have this idea of writing as being, there's the volcanic event, which is like the bursting forth and the creation, and then the slow like rain comes down and molds it and shapes it. At least that's I wish I was a faster editor, but I spend so much time editing and just kind of whittling away. Or maybe a better analogy would be like a hunk of, like a tree. If you're carving a piece of tree, you have the basic shape that you start with and you kind of let that dictate how you shape it and you do the details and stuff. But you still have to have that first creative drive and don't hold yourself. I think so many people, they want every sentence to be perfect. And my only way to write is to not care. Just keep going about, because you're also more, Adrian, of a grammarian, right? Because I remember listening and you talk about pronunciation, and you're more of a technical writer, right?
I don't want to be, but it just like, it's like, right. So my old job before I fully like jumped back into adult work, I was a editor and writer at a very small publisher. And so I did do writing, like writing assignments were a regular thing, but it was always like interview this person that owns this random like manufacturing company and then like write an article about their company. So in some ways it was pretty technical or like journalistic. But I mean, partly it was because I was never excited about those assignments. Like if I were writing about something I love, it'd be very different, but I would fucking procrastinate so bad and end up like writing this article, and it was always fine. Like it always turned out just great and everyone was like, this is a great story, cool. But I was like, no, you have no idea how fucking painful that was.
Yeah.
And how like editing my own writing, and I'm like, oh
yeah, it's there's so many things I don't know.
But then it's also basically PR writing. So I'd have like people from like that I interviewed who would like, I'd send them a draft of the article and they'd like want me to change every fucking thing that they said in it. Like come up with like these unnatural clunky sounding quotes to replace what they actually said in a recorded interview.
Yeah. My biggest pet peeve is when people are not specific enough on what they want. And then you spend all this time on something and then they're like, they read it and give you these general suggestions. They're like, you know, it would be cool if instead of like some plot thing that would completely change the entire story. And I'm like, that is not constructive. It's like this throwaway. People just don't realize how much time you put into things. But
So one of my questions that I found myself wondering about when I was watching Three Cheers for Satan is like, first of all, do you watch the stuff you write when it comes out, like the movies or scenes?
So I did watch Three Cheers and I did watch Evil Tiki Babes. And so I've written mostly for Jackie St. James. I've written for a few other people too. I've written for gay sites. And a lot of them, they never tell me when they come out and they never... so I'll usually
they don't tell me either. Yeah. I don't know. It's always a surprise when your show comes out.
Or then sometimes like there's this one director I wrote for and it would come out and it said written by him, and I'm like, he doesn't even know how to, he would just have these ideas and he doesn't know how to write. It's just angry and livid. So that's my biggest thing, is other people taking credit. But I've Some of them I'll watch all the way through, especially if I direct it. You definitely want to watch it all the way through and, you know, make it your baby. But it's sometimes it's hard. I think if I go in with low expectations, I'm like, this isn't going to be that good, then the movie will be so much better than you expect. But if you go in with an exact vision of what it wants to be, with all the compromises you have to make in porn, with all of the, you're going to have to, somebody's going to cancel last minute, something's going to happen, you're going to have to do a rewrite, like the the tiki thing with the hot tub. So some of them I don't want to be disappointed. Or this one, I think it was one of the first ones I wrote. I pumped all of the poetic writing into the voiceover. Because I was like, they're not going to have to worry about memorizing this. And she could read, but it just, she couldn't read well.
Voiceovers are challenging.
So that was the first thing we filmed. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to watch this.
Well, and also, do you ever find it difficult? Because I don't, I mean, I'm kind of a porn novice. I don't particularly enjoy visual porn or like
Rachel doesn't
porn.
Watch porn.
I don't. It's okay. I don't, you really can tell. Watch porn.
Everyone knows this.
You're fine. In the majority. Most. Well, yeah. I'm not gonna say most, but
I think most. I think most.
You're cerebral sexual. You're more.
Yeah, I enjoy like reading or I, but I'm not a huge fan of like movies. Or, but is it difficult writing when? You know, or like maybe I just assume that people just sort of like skip that first sort of like 10 minutes of plot. They're just trying to get straight to the banging.
Yeah. I think what's more difficult is when I tell people I write porn scripts and they laugh and like, so what, the pizza guy comes in? Just like.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, because for me, when I watch porn, I just skip straight to the penetration. Because I'm not in it for the story. So when I watch like Evil Tiki Base, I skip the porn because I'm not there to watch the porn. I'm there to watch the story.
That's what I did.
Yeah, that's what most people do. I don't know.
I was actually kind of hoping to find an edit of that, of Three Cheers for Satan, that was like just the dialogue scenes. Because I know, like, Adult Time did that with, like, Teenage Lesbian, you know, right. Which I
well, that was because that was Bree's baby.
But, like, yeah, well, yeah,
that's
yeah.
Story, so she wanted that to be.
What do you think of the fact that, so, the thing that really got me with Evil Tiki Babes is that there was, I had to keep rewatching, because I was watching the dialogue portions only, and I had a hard time understanding what they were saying because normally I watch stuff with subtitles. Because I have
a lot of people do that. That's interesting.
Yeah, and so I was like, "Wait, what are they selling again? Did she say caca?" I was like, "What the fuck is she saying?" It wasn't until much later I was like, "Oh, she said cocaine."
Yeah, cocaine.
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh, okay, that makes sense. That all tracks." I knew it was some sort of drug, but. What do you think that having that like subtitle feature is important to to actually like enjoying the script if you're someone who does?
Honestly, I'd love to see. I'm going to just like co-opt this for a second because Rachel brought this up to me shortly before we actually started recording. Like we were texting and I was like, oh my God, this is how have I never like. I always watch everything with subtitles on too. And also that's an accessibility issue. So we need to. Mm-hmm. Change that. I know that's
what
a lot more work.
Notice though, but... when I watch with subtitles, the worst is with stand-up comedy. Is I'll watch it, but I will be reading, and I'll kind of hit the joke before they do, and so I'll miss some of the timing.
Mm.
But as far as people enjoying it, I mean, I wish they had that option so people could have it. It's just a money issue. It's the same reason they won't let me. There was this one scene I wrote. Like very basic Italian for what is her name?
Valentina Nappi?
Valentina, yeah. And we couldn't use it because if you use a different language, then they have to pay somebody to translate it and subtitle it. So it's just a money issue.
They have to?
it's some sort of distribution thing.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's nuts.
So we can't use different languages, even if it's just somebody saying something very, very basic. So I wish they had that feature. That would be great. Yeah. But again, I don't know who, I don't know the demographics on what people are buying these movies for. Mm-hmm. So I would like to think it's for the story, but I also don't think it probably is. For me, I just consider it practice and I consider it fun. I do it because I like to do it. I wouldn't say I do it specifically for myself, because I think even with writing, I do it because I want somebody else to appreciate, to be like, oh, look how smart and clever whatever he is. I think that's most art, and this is a very skewed opinion for me, is almost like a mating strategy. It's like peacock feathers. I think for me, art was created. We became musical people. We became artists because we want to impress people. We want to be like, look what I, this is a visual example of how smart I am. And you want to mate with somebody who is intelligent and smart, because you'll have smarter kids. So I would, as much as I would like to say that I write just for me, I think I write for the one or two people like you guys who actually watched it and maybe enjoyed part of it. Or I think with Jackie, I write for Jackie and I want her to be like, oh, this is a good script, or oh, this is a good line. And the same with Joanna. Like, I want her to say, I really like this, or this is funny, or this made me laugh. I mean, that's, I don't think anything makes me happier than if I made somebody laugh.
It did actually in the first episode. I don't know any of the actors or actors, but she told Ramon, like, stop pretending to enjoy your...
Be a rude bartender, stop pretending to enjoy your job, your sex life.
Yeah, that made me
wait,
laugh.
What did she say? Laughed over yourself.
I actually wrote it down because I was like, that's really funny. Stop having pride in your fake job. because the whole thing is that it's a front for their drug operation, and he's a bartender, right. And he just, it seems like all he wants to do is wear pants and be a real bartender.
Oh my god,
that's one of the plot points.
Yeah,
also that's funny because it's Ramon.
Yeah. Well, he has that accent, so
he's like, gross, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's so, that's another thing when talking about writing porn scripts, you gotta be conscious of who you're booking. Usually, for the most part, the guys, if you book a guy, he'll be there. You can't count too much on women because things happen. They'll get booked by somebody better. But so when I know Ramon is going to be there, I'll intentionally write less dialogue, or you have to write something that explains why he has such a thick accent.
Or just put as many words that start with R in it as possible.
So roll it. He's
so
amazing.
He's
though.
Just constantly rolling his R's.
Yeah. So you said, like, it's less about, it's when people are like, oh, so it's just the pizza box or whatever. And Adrian and I have talked about what it's like for her to get reactions to, like, yes, I work in porn. But I want to know, what do your parents think about your career? I guess it really only matters if you're close, but...
Yeah, they're much older. They had me when they were later. Mm-hmm. When they were older.
But they're boomers, I assume.
Yeah.
Like my parents.
Well, my dad was technically born during the Great Depression. And my mom was a boomer. She was born right after World War II. My dad doesn't care at all. He watches porn. My mom... So recently, I have to share this caveat, is they sent a note in this email that was... basically like a Christmas card, and it said, Sean's our man of mystery working in porn in LA. Because I don't...
Wait, this is like the update, the family Christmas letter update that goes to the entire extended family?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I love that so much.
So, my mom... It's hard to explain. I think I was telling somebody about this the other day, but if I was a millionaire, my mom would be like, oh, okay. I don't think she would care that much. Mm-hmm. But her only thing is that she's Catholic. And growing up, I was Catholic until I broke away and became very atheist. And it's kind of sad because her only thing that she wanted me to be was religious. Like, she didn't care about anything else, just as long as you're religious. And that's the one thing I'm not. Mm. So I think that's more of a problem for her. But it's, I mean, we still love each other, and it's, I just try not to talk about it. But of course, every time I go home, my mom wants me to listen to a priest talking about how porn is the evils of the world. But the irony and the point I always bring up is I used to be a bartender. Mm-hmm. And now I work in porn. Which do you think has ruined more lives? Alcohol or porn?
Yes, thank you.
I've
brought this point up to my own mother.
I've never had anybody morally think that me working in a bar is wrong or a problem. Mm-hmm. And realistically, I think I contributed to more problems than I do with porn. But granted, both alcohol and porn are adult vices that I think you can consume healthily as an adult. Now, if you overconsume either one, just like if you overconsume fast food or cupcakes, that is a problem, right? And that can ruin your life. So, and also another one is my brother works in the oil industry. arguably, which one of the is, yeah, which one is
howdy, y'all? Who dang?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's my Jackson coming out for a second.
But they, I mean, they love me. There's no real, there's just a few awkward, my mom always wants to know what I'm writing, and I kind of,
ooh,
like, I'm working on this like romance story. I just don't want to get into the details of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, it's not like I hide it. I mean, I use my real name, and
yeah,
I haven't really, my mom has a very huge extended family in Kansas, and they're all religious. And I don't really, I haven't talked to him, I guess, since I've been more involved in the industry. So who knows? One of my aunts posted something pretty negative on my Facebook, but I just blocked her.
Yeah.
Sounds appropriate. Yeah, that's what I would do.
But I've always, it's been more responsive being just open about it.
Sorry, someone at the apartment next door is opening their garage, which is like essentially under me. And it's really, really loud, and it's gonna come through on the microphone. So
I could hear it.
Yeah,
nice. Yeah.
But I guess what I was saying is the interesting thing is, so my brother's friends—they're all oil people, have normal jobs, normal lives.
Okay, oil people. The company I used to work for does a lot of publications for like oil industry people. So I like had to like interview people, and like the company I worked for was like up the ass of a bunch of oil industry people. And like those people are crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're crazier than anyone I've ever met in porn. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, when I sit down with them, guess what is the one thing they want to all talk about? Is like,
they all want to talk about porn.
Porn. Right. And they all watch it. So it's, I like being up front with my freak flag. Like, I consider myself relatively vanilla, but people think I'm odd just because my porn identity and my real identity are completely blended. There's no mm-hmm. separation.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just who I am. And I wish more people would be open about it, because I think that's really the only way. It's kind of like when gay people started being open and having pride parades. Everybody sort of realized, like, oh, they're not so evil. They're not so terrible. They're great. But
yeah, that's why I try to be more open, at least now, compared to the way I was before. Because before I retired, I was, like, super, super compartmentalized with everything to a degree that it was, like, too much compartmentalization. And it was, like, a mental health problem, essentially. Yeah. So now I try to, like, keep it balanced. So it's not like the pendulum's completely swinging the other direction. But that's, like, why I use, you know, Adrian, like my name Adrian on the podcast, for example.
But it's different for especially female performers, because you have your performer identity, which is not necessarily you, and then you have your regular mm-hmm. identity. Whereas me, I'm not, I mean, who I am as a writer and who I am behind the
scenes. You don't have like a stage persona necessarily.
Right, that I want to keep up. So like, you as a performer, most performers want to present themselves as, you know, slutty and super filthy, but that's not necessarily who they are in their personal life.
It could be, but it doesn't mean that I'm in the mood for that all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. But for me, there's no need for separation, I guess.
Well, it's like I've mentioned many times on the podcast already that like one of my pet peeves at this point, since I do the podcast and I'm back in the porn industry, is like when fans join my my like private, like my adult performer stuff and start calling me Adrian just because they listened to the podcast. And I'm like, no, that's not, you're still, it's just weird. That's like people who are fans of Rihanna calling right. her like Robin Fenty, like as if you fucking grew up next door to her.
I saw that it was this guy who's in the industry and he was meeting, he's like on the level of a producer and he was meeting a performer for the first time. It was actually Stormy Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes up to her and says her real name. And it was as he introduces himself, and I'm like, what? Like, he thinks that it puts him more on a personal level.
Right. Okay, good job. You have the capability right, of using Google. That is not fucking special. Like,
I think that's also why I have such an aversion to names, because I never know what name people refer. And then also, like, if you're in public with them.
Yeah.
And who you're meeting. So I'm just, I avoid.
Yeah, it can be a hairy situation. Well, on the subject of names, I wanted to ask you, since you do write under your real name, are you worried about, like, stalkers? Or, like, I know it's less common probably for men to have right. that issue, but.
I thought about this. I've actually thought about this a lot. So, as a male, I kind of wish that I had stalkers. I wish people cared that much about me. I have a.
Be careful what you wish for. Right,
I just started a Sex Panther, and I know
you might have a stalker Panther. Right here.
I wish. I wish.
Here I come. I'm outside your door right now, actually.
I have a few fans that are a little weird, but nothing stalkerish. But I've also. I've known a few, so I dated Val Dodds, who used her real name. There's a few performers who use her real name, Angela White, Dana mm-hmm. DeArmond,
yeah,
Kendra Sutherland. And I understand the reasons why you would want to keep it separate, but I also think there is a lot of fear as to, if people want to find out who you are, they can find out who you are. But if you just sort of own it, I don't think it's quite as bad as people worry that it would be. Obviously, it does cause some problems.
Yeah.
But
my main concerns would just be my siblings, you know? Right. Like, that's one of the biggest reasons that I do have any concerns about protecting my identity is just for my family members, because...
So you have your name is so good.
Ugh. I know. Don't tempt people.
Sorry.
But no, like I have
your
I
name
have
is horrible. It would be so bad for porn.
my older sibling like has already experienced like just fucking dating, like meeting people from Tinder, and like nice. It'll you know, after a couple dates, it'll come up that she has a sister who does porn, and then all of a sudden their entire demeanor changes, right. and they're like, "Oh, does that mean you're like her? You're into this?" And like, it's just dudes being fucking gross and douchey. But like, if it were that easy to just like Google and find my family members, I think that effect on them would be increased by tenfold.
Yeah,
and like, so it's not so much that I care about,
it's just worrying about the family.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Well, I know, like, Val Dodds, she didn't too much have a... I can't remember if there was ever really an instance of that.
Yeah, like, if I were an only child, fuck yeah, I would do it. If I were an only child, I probably would have started performing under my real name in the first place, but, yeah. You know, I don't... Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you, but that was just...
I mean, I don't really know... I have wondered and worried about that, because Alpha is such a uncommon name. But another part of me realistically knows that I'm not going to be famous enough that people are going to care in porn. I know I'm not going to be famous enough in porn that people are going to care. Like, maybe one day I'll write a book that's a bestseller about porn. But I think people then would identify me more as a writer than somebody in porn.
Yeah.
But there's no way I'm going to be at your level to enough people that are going to care. And also another part of me thinks it was my name too. I was given this name. And then another part of me also thinks how few people actually really care. Maybe this is just a cynical thing as a guy, because I don't have goggles. I don't have, nobody's crazily looking for me. But I always think about my great grandparents. I can't even name their first name. I don't know. There's just, we think that what we do is so important that all these people are going to care, and it really isn't. Nobody
right.
cares that much.
There's so fucking much going on in the world at any given time. Like, you know, yeah, you might have like a certain number of people that do care quite a lot, but it's not like, you yeah. know, even in my case, you know, I'm like, dude, it's like, it's, I retired for 5 years and it was pretty fucking easy for me to just disappear.
Right.
Off yeah. the face of the porn industry. And I was happy to do that. So,
yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I go out on, you know, when I used to do Tinder or Bumble and they didn't even do background checks, didn't even Google me. I could be yeah. a crazy person. They should have. I gave them my real name.
Mm-hmm.
And those are people that I'm going out on a date with. So how am I going to expect a stranger to care who I am?
Can I ask you another question?
No.
Potentially an invasive
no
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I sound like the dudes who message me on OnlyFans. Hello. Can I ask you a question? I'm like, bitch, you just asked me one.
Sure. Ask me a very personal question.
So for like a lot of the stuff you've written, I believe for Jackie St. James, is under the family ties or like the. Yeah. The faux incest genre. And is that like, if you watch porn, is that something that like, if you watch that scenario, are you like into that? Or is it more that just like everyone in porn has to write and film that because it's so popular? Or like just in general, what are your thoughts on that genre?
Everything I've written for porn, with the exception of What We Do for Money, was to fit certain specific guidelines. So with all the family center stuff, they'll tell us, okay, we want mother-son pairing, or we want stepdad pairing, or whatever it is. So I figure out how to make a story around that. Luckily with the family stuff, it does make the plot easier in the sense of these people all live together. So you have to invent a reason, which is the whole pizza delivery thing, is like, how do you get a stranger into the house, into bed in a short time? But as far as the whole rise of faux-cest, I have different opinions on it. But what I think it's a labeling thing. When you search for MILF, it's just a shorthand for, I want a woman with big breasts who is dominant in the scene, but not so dominant as to be called a dominatrix.
And so not like teen looking right. younger.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I sometimes I'll look for MILF, but it's not because I want to hear about how she's the person's stepmom. It's because I want a sexually empowered, aggressive woman with big tits or whatever it is. And it's also another reason I avoid teen, because I don't like the teens usually pretend like they don't like it, or the woman to talk, you know, and to be more into it and be slightly more like, I'm gonna fuck you, as opposed to the teen being tricked into being seduced.
Yeah. So, like the never mind, my brain is broken right now. I can't think of like basic words in my vocabulary. Continue. Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my theories. It's just a shorthand for labeling a sexual dynamic between two people. So if it's stepdad, you know it's going to be older guy, younger girl.
So it's more about people wanting to see an age difference than it is about the way those two people are related to each other.
Right. So saying stepdad yeah. is so much shorter than saying my older boss. I don't know. It's just.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's kind of why it's a popular genre.
But I don't know. Anything else? But no, I don't. I'm not into. I never had brothers.
I will say I did shoot one like scene where it's actually like one of my most watched scenes ever, and it was Jackie St. James directed. I believe she wrote it too, but it was like where I was supposed to fuck my stepdad, and it was really fun to shoot, but also because for me, I was like, okay, in reality, the dude I'm having sex with is like 10 years older right. than me. Like, he's not really like a plausible dad.
Yeah.
No, that's why he was your stepdad, Adrian.
Or no, he wasn't even my stepdad. Fuck, he was my dad. He was my father-in-law.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I guess, a father-in-law could be like any age, really.
You know what's strange is, so Jackie and I, we did one where it was like foster kids. And we were like, that'll be fine, right? So it's still the same thing. But apparently some people were like, no, that's so bad. I'm like, how is that worse than step?
I know
some people are very strongly opinionated, but we just thought, because it's not our thing and it's not our...
Ooh, I'm one of those people. I have a friend that I'm pretty close to who grew up in the foster care system and has experienced a lot of abuse. And like, and I can't get into any of that. Cause if I even see that word, like in the title, I automatically think of her and I'm like, ooh, this is really insensitive. Like, because a foster kid has no fucking control over any of that shit that happened to them.
But it's also,
I know it's all just fantasy, but it's still like, whew.
It's just weird where people draw the lines. Cause
yeah.
The number one risk factor for child abuse in the home is a step parent present in the home. So I'm sure there's a lot of step abuse stories.
Oh my gosh.
Sheer number of steps. But for some reason, it's not as taboo as we didn't realize because we, I guess, weren't foster kids. We didn't necessarily know anybody in the foster system. But
yeah. Well, and a lot of the time, I think you wouldn't know if someone is. They probably don't necessarily leave with that information.
Have you been getting a lot of, because it sounds like basically someone gives you the idea and they're like, can you please come up with a scenario that makes sense? And then we'll go from there. Have you gotten anything that's specifically like more COVID related? I'm not talking about like doctor, nurse or whatever, more like how do you make a virtual session work and make sense if you're trying to, I don't know, make, like, how do you make Skype sex make sense for...
Oh, are you saying like have a Skype sex scene?
More scenes where it's like virtual or like where it makes sense that the actors are not in the same place because of shooting limitations.
Yeah.
Oh, I deal with this all the time because that's another factor is we have some performers booked one day, some performers booked another day. So you have a whole story that's weaving four sex stories together and you somehow have to figure out a story that makes sense without the actors from A.
Ever being in the same room.
So we do have a lot of their phone calls, Skypes, so we'll film those on different days. Usually what we have to do is have, if it's a feature, have at least the main character have two sex scenes so we don't have to pay them a dialogue day so they can be there both days and interact with both sets of performers. But it's challenging. And I think that's actually probably one of my assets as a writer is I'm good with patterns and I'm good with verbal puzzles. So, and usually how I get started writing for most people is they'll say, I have to film this movie in 4 days and I haven't written anything. I need you. So I never have time. It's always, can you do this? And I'll.
How much advance notice do you have? Like, how much time do you get to complete a script?
Well, it really depends. With Jackie, I would always have months, but well, she would give me. It's hard to explain because.
Yeah.
Most other directors, though, it's a week. They'll give you a week notice.
That's what I was thinking might be kind of the deal, yeah.
But it also just depends. I mean, now this whole situation is different because with Joanna, we're just kind of... I helped her figure out a plot for she's shooting at her house with just Aaron. So it was like a two-sex scene scenario that they wanted to make.
Aaron Smallhands?
Yeah. And... But then we're also working on scripts for the future when this all ends, so... Yeah, but mostly a week, I would say.
Also, I like how I just called him Aaron Smallhands. Like, his last name is Smallhands. It's like one word.
Well, he kind of goes by Aaron, or at least that's...
He does. He uses them interchangeably, I've noticed. Yeah.
So if you had unlimited budget, unlimited whatever, you could hire whoever the fuck you wanted, you had as much time as you wanted, what would be your, like...
Oh my God.
Your big
porn Magnus.
Yeah, your porn Magnus opus.
Magnum opus? Wait,
my Magnum opus.
I don't know. I already told you guys my brain.
Your masterpiece.
Yeah.
So I've got this question a lot. And my problem with theoreticals is I always want to know like the specific details, because of that scenario, even if I was a big Hollywood Quentin Tarantino, I would still have so many limitations in terms of what actors, how much location, what I could feasibly shoot.
Okay, you have, your budget is
how about that? I'll tell you two that I've written.
Okay.
One was, and this is when I was still living in Florida and I was just sending scripts to people and when parodies were still kind of big, so there was some budget. And I wrote an adaptation of The Taming of the Shrew. it was word for word.
A classic.
All of the dialogue was taken from the play, but I just cut out so much and framed it in a way that made it very like a dominatrix scene. I don't know if you've read Taming of the Shrew, but basically there's an wild and unruly girl.
Things I hate about you.
And so there's this rogue who comes in and tames this woman by acting insane and crazy, but it sort of played into this interesting power dynamic that I saw was like a BDSM thing. And so it, for me, it was a puzzle of how can I take the Shakespeare play and turn it into an adult. And I think I turned it down to 30 pages, script pages. So most of our features are about 20. So it was realistic and it was 4 or 5 sex scenes. So I would love to do that. But of course, even though it was the most stripped down version of Shakespeare you could ever do, that would still cost, I don't even know, at least $60,000. I mean, how much does Caden and Deeper and all those, I've heard Caden gets $100,000 and hers aren't even that.
I mean, they're good, but I have no idea. I don't know anything about porn budgets since I've never directed, like, well, I don't know.
So most
I know what performer rates should be and like crew and stuff, but as far as like all those external factors, like I don't know what people pay to rent like locations. I don't know. Yeah,
usually $100 an hour, which is why we're always so pissed off when a performer is an hour late.
yeah I understand that.
About that, but and another one I wrote was called, and this was another thing that I wrote on speculation, and this is also when I was living in Florida, was called Astronauts versus Aquanauts. It has this very campy, the way I envision it, it would be sort of like a Barbarella, but everybody has weird, crazy outfits, but
oh my God,
porn friendly. And so
I need that to be a thing.
Yeah. So there's the space people and they come down and battle the people from the ocean.
The mermaid people?
There was all kinds of different Aquanaut people. It's based off this party, this theme party I flew in Florida.
How high were you when you wrote this?
Oh, I hate weed. Oh, it's
a I didn't say what you had to be high on.
No, it wasn't high at all. It's very sober. But
even better.
So the way I wrote it, it was very campy. Like the space people go on to land and they get chased by land sharks. And the way I wrote it, it would just be little dogs in like shark suits that
chase. Oh my God.
And then
what's the rate for renting 20 dogs for a porn production?
You just asked
20 dogs
bring their dogs. I don't even know.
But that's true. You could literally just ask every girl in porn to bring her dog.
Right.
Like,
there's that
people would be so excited.
You're either a cat person or a dog porn person, but they all have.
I'm a cat porn person. I think it's pretty obvious.
Listening to your Rod Jackson thing, though, made a really good point of how their pets, especially in the adult industry, are their main support person.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, but there's also this great scene in this Aquanaut thing. So everything underwater, I wanted it to be filmed just in a fish tank with like miniatures.
Oh my God.
So just as cheesy, I would really love to make something like that where, because I
kind
of
like
have
Wes Anderson's Life Aquatic.
Yes, which is my favorite Wes Anderson movie. I love that movie.
Same, because it has old Harold from Harold and Maude in it.
Wow, I did not.
Have
even
you seen,
know
Harold
that.
And Maude?
I've seen Harold and Maude. I didn't realize.
Yeah, the actor's name is Bud Cort, and I have a forever teen crush on him because it was my favorite movie growing up. And Bud Cort's in it, and he's like 60, and also like he had facial reconstruction surgery because he had like some accidents, so he looks like totally fucking different, but still like himself, but old. And he's a weird looking dude. So Yeah.
Did you ever masturbate to him and Maude getting it on? Because they have sex, right?
No.
Isn't it implied? But it's sort of implied.
Yeah, there's not a sex scene. It's implied. It's like, it's clear that they have sex because, like, they're like caressing each other, and then they cut to like them in the morning, like smoking a cigarette or something. So, like, obviously they had sex.
Wasn't just she the also once. The crazy lady in Rosemary's Baby?
I've never seen Rosemary's Baby, so I don't know. But I think my theory is that Maude is the original manic pixie dream girl.
Ooh.
Interesting.
And she is. If you watch the movie, you're like, oh my God, this is like exactly the trope. It just happens that she's fucking 79.
Yeah, she definitely is very, yeah. She lives in a different dimension in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, now I need to stop, because this is what I'm supposed to talk to Jackie about when I do her OnlyFans interview podcast thing.
Oh, you're going to talk to her about movies? What are you going to talk to her about? Harold and Maude?
Yeah.
Ah.
So that's why probably what I'm thinking of, because it's fresh on my mind, because I've been thinking about it, because I know I need to talk about it for like
the
an hour.
Actress's name is Vivian Pickles, which is a name.
That is great.
Yeah.
No.
Would it be better
Vivian Pickles plays the mom.
I've never seen Harold and Maude. I just looked up Wikipedia and was like, Vivian Pickles, what a name.
That reminds me of Annie Sprinkles. Did you ever work with Annie Sprinkles?
I did not.
She's almost like a Maude character in a way. She's the one that, I think there's a word for it, but she makes love to trees.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
she's like an OG, like, sex work
right, who's just
activist.
Completely
yeah.
loving, free, just out there.
Just a hippie.
Yes.
I had other questions for you, but I don't know how important any of them are. Like,
they're
do
so
you...
important. I can make them important. Ask me a stupid
are you
question.
Personally offended when actors go off script or ad lib instead of like what you actually wrote? Like, if you wrote something, you're like, oh, this is so clever, and then you go and you watch your work and they like didn't say that thing, they just ad libbed something because they couldn't remember the exact line.
So I have mixed feelings about it. I think when you're on set, you're in such a time crunch because you are paying $100 an hour for location that a lot of times you don't have more than two takes. And I also understand a lot of them have a lot of dialogue to memorize and they haven't read it until that day, which is fucking amazing. I don't know if I could do it. So I'm pretty patient. And that's also why I try to, if I want something really important said, I try to write into the voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, when I write a script, I try to let it go. You can't hold on to it because it's going to be different than what you imagine, unless it's like my baby. But I mean, there's occasions too where they'll find something in the script or they'll play it a way that you didn't really ever anticipate, and that'll evolve and it'll create this something different than what you thought it would be. So that's cool too. And there's, I don't know. There are certain performers who really think they're funny and really good at ad-libbing, but might not necessarily understand that the joke that you have is going to come back around in the end.
Yeah.
But you got to let it go.
Yeah. I guess in that regard, when that happens, that's maybe where it's beneficial that it's porn and maybe people aren't paying super close attention.
Right.
Although, if you read Pornhub comments on, like, I think it happens less on, like if I go look at Adult Time and I'm watching, like, on the platform, like, I'm paying, I'm a member, I think it's much less common for people to get kind of trolly and stupid in the comment section. But I do, like, some of my scenes that involve actual acting, I go and look at Pornhub and, like, the comments are almost exclusively, like, people pointing out plot holes.
Right.
And I'm like, what? You guys have too much time on your hands.
Yeah, there's it just all boils down to money. And it's a game of, I always, even at award season, I think of it like Moneyball in terms of how is a movie like one of Caden Cross's ones that has a $100,000 budget going to compete against my movie that was $21,000. It's not even the same thing. So I try to remember nobody really cares, and these trolls, I don't care what these trolls think, but I just do it for me. Like, if it was a clever, I don't do it just for me, but for the one or two people that actually watch and appreciate how much you did with how little. Like, Jackie and I have this saying on set that we do the best with what we had. So that's you just got to push forward. And I mean, when I directed my first movie, there's a lot of stuff that went wrong that first day, and it was such a great learning experience. I felt like I had PTSD. But
what movie was that? The first one you directed?
What We Do for Money.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
which is your Twitter banner right now?
Yeah, right now. And so to give you, I won't tell you who it was, but the male performer came blood in the first scene. So he was freaking out. So we had to calm him down.
He what?
He came blood. Like blood came out in his ejaculate.
Oh my God. I don't know why those words like came blood. I was like, he became
it's
blood.
Okay.
No.
I need
subtitles. I mumbled. Also.
No, I heard the words you said. My brain wasn't putting them together. Like
just
I didn't
never heard that
you
combination.
Mean, like, he ejaculated. There was blood in his semen.
Right. And also the girl was scared of blood, so she almost fainted.
Oh,
so
no.
So he had to calm him down.
Jesus.
Then he had to get hard again so we could fake an internal cream pie. And the problem was I was the one like using a turkey baster to get the fake ejaculate into her. But then everybody does.
I'm just going to interject real quick and remind all of our listeners and fans of porn who continually message me all the time asking how to get into porn and telling me how much you want to be a male porn star. Just really envision this story happening right now. Thank you. Okay, continue.
Yeah, so we inject her with the fake cum, and then he keeps fucking her. And I'm like, you can't do that because it's just going to shove the fake cum up in her. So he pulls the dick out, no fake cum.
But he's trying to keep his dick hard.
Right,
and he's
exactly.
like, but I need.
So he pulls the dick out, no cum comes out. So we have to fake the cream pie like 3 times before any comes out. So that put us past time about an hour or two. And then it put me into a panic, and everything else ran late. And so I just had to cut corners with everything else. And then the other thing was that main character was written into a scene for the next day. Problem is he was freaking out, rightly so. And also the other performer didn't necessarily know if she wanted to work with him because maybe he had an STD or something, which he didn't. But we didn't know that. So I had to that night rewrite the scene to where he was still in it but didn't have sex, but then I also had to recast, so I had to get a new male performer, and then the agent demanded that I had to pay him his full rate, I think. So that put me over budget, which put me in hot water with
the other performer that got pulled out of the scene.
Right, because he had told us, because there was an option of like, we can still try the sex scene, but if he comes blood again, then he's going to leave set immediately and go to the doctor. So then
that's a stupid condition, because if he does have an STI, hello, yeah. You've already transmitted it.
So this is all, I was dealing with all of this while also trying to film the movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is just, it gave me nightmares that night.
What is
it might give me a nightmare.
What is fake semen made of?
It's usually lube. They make it to be lube. So okay. I don't know.
Depends on where it's going, Rachel. I think on that set, because it was supposed to be a cream pie, like an internal cum shot, a lot of the time if it's on the face or like external, they use Cetaphil.
Right. Yeah. So that one was
I would never put Cetaphil inside my vagina. So at that point, we've got to find a different thing.
Bad Dragon makes some. There's also
yeah, I have a Spunk, like 5 bottles of cum lube.
Okay. I use Cetaphil, so that's going to change the whole experience.
You're welcome. Just when you sploosh that Cetaphil on your face. Because washing your face every night, Rachel.
Goodbye.
Think of cum.
It's the same with baby wipes. Like whenever you see any regular person that has baby wipes or Cetaphil, you're just... I'm also the person, this is my job, to go to Walmart and buy Cetaphil, baby wipes, douches, and enemas. And at this point, I just have no shame. I just, like, oh, this is my life. This is what. And also at Walmart, you have to.
I feel
call
like everyone
the woman
who works
over.
At Southern California, yeah, Walmart, CVS, etc., they know
right
what you do when you buy those that grouping of products.
But I have to call a woman over to open the door to get the douches.
Oh my God. But the douches are like behind a locked case.
And in case anybody wanted to steal these, because it's with all the condoms and stuff, which.
Oh, Jesus.
But it's good. I think it's important to put yourself in embarrassing situations as often as you can, because it reminds you that nobody really cares.
That's true. No one gives a fuck.
But I think it also prepares you to stand up in a moment when you should stand up for something and not care about the public ridicule, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say it prepares you to stand up in a loincloth eating a dog treat.
I mean, that too. I started streaking because I was insecure about my body. And I'm like kind of a nudist, but I do it because I'm afraid. I always have this theory of putting your insecurities on parade.
I was going to say that it's a good time to end, but you just said that you started streaking. So we need to talk about this now and then we can wrap up. Is this a hobby? Like was the first time you disrobed and ran around in public?
It was high school, probably. I don't know. There was something. And then I started doing it more in college. It was at my trick at parties.
Have you ever been arrested for streaking? No, wait, because I did your background check you don't have a criminal history.
I'm too fast. They couldn't catch me.
Aha. That's why you run. That's why you did that 10K. Yeah. Because you wanted to make sure that you can maintain a certain speed.
It was
to
a marathon,
evade the police
okay,
when you're streaking.
Not a 10K. Big difference.
Oh, yeah. You're right. It was a marathon. You're right. I don't look. The word marathon isn't even in my vocabulary, so I forgot it existed. So I said 10K because it was the next closest thing I could think of.
Yeah. But I think I don't streak anymore, but I do a lot of nude modeling photography and also at Burning Man. And it's partly just there's something freeing about it because it gets you out of your comfort zone. And the same way we talked about this at karaoke, when you do karaoke, it makes you embarrassed, but it also gives you this rush and it makes you more connected with people. Like one, nobody cares, but it just puts you in this environment of being accepted. It's kind of like when I used to love going to fetish parties because everybody is so open because what they're afraid of everybody learning about them is out there in the open. And they're just so accepting of whoever you are or whatever you are. So me streaking at parties, it was kind of like, it's just like, this is who I am, you know, and it was a way of people talking to me, and it's liberating in a way. And it's only liberating for me because it's terrifying, if that makes sense. So I'm naturally very shy, and I used to think I was, had social anxiety, but meeting younger people in the adult world who've smoked pot their whole life and been webcam models and don't know how to talk to people in their life, I realize I don't have social anxiety anymore, but it really helps for me to force yourself to do things you're afraid of in public, I think.
Yeah.
Are you sad that Burning Man has been canceled this year?
You know, in a weird way, I'm actually happy because every year I do Burning Man, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna take a year off because it just takes so much out of you. It's so much fun, and it's the first week I ever went was the best week of my life by far, but it's hard. You got to prepare, and you not only invest the money to go, but you're losing out on work when you're there.
Yeah.
So I've been meaning to take a year off, but every year I get FOMO, and inevitably somebody has a ticket or something happens, and I'm like, well, I have to go.
And this year, that's just not an option.
Yeah, not an option.
On the table.
So it's almost like this exiled for the good of the realm, where I have to not be as busy as I usually am. I have to not go and just sit with myself and have a little vacation. So, yes.
Cool. Which you're getting to do now in Vegas.
Hooray! Yes, in Vegas.
Well, great. Cool. This was very fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Hopefully I didn't talk your ear off with my tangential stories.
Oh, no. They're fantastic. This is definitely going to be one of my personal favorite episodes. We talked about just about everything that I wanted to talk about. Also, it helps I actually fucking did research, and I'm trying to get much better. I'm trying to be a better interviewer. Oh, I just hit my microphone because I listen to my own shit when I ask people questions, and the last one I did, I was like, oh, that was the worst interview ever. I did such a bad job. It's okay. We can learn and improve.
Yeah, I used to interview people all the time for my writing, and hearing your own voice is the first thing. That's what it sounds like. Then all the verbal tics of which I still can't get rid of, but also it's cringy because I would type them out, so I'd have to listen to them slow and re-listen to them.
Oh yeah, transcribing your own dumbass self and all your filler words.
So painful, so painful. But you get better. Well, it's the only way you get better is doing stuff that sucks or is terrifying or.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyways. All right.
There was Adrian,
we're gonna say what? Oh yeah.
There was one last question you had for Sean.
It's at the How often do you get comments about your lack of eyebrows?
So, I used to play this game in college where I would tell I told them I wanted them to tell me my worst physical flaw or the worst thing about me because I wanted. I'm glutton for pain, I guess.
Because you, again, want to embarrass yourself.
Yeah. So that was the first time. It's like somebody.
Did you do this while you were naked and streaking? Like,
no, it usually be afterwards after I had that. I could take it. I would never do it. I would never do it to anybody else. I would never tell them. They would always want me to tell them. I'm like, no, this is just for me. But it was a way of also improving and learning and like figuring out, because nobody is going to tell you. Your friends are going to tell you. Well, maybe your friends, if you talk shit about your friends to their face. Which I think is good and why we all need friends who give a shit. But it was a way of, like, my eyebrows, I never realized that I didn't have any eyebrows. Somebody told me when I told them to tell me my worst physical flaw. And so after that, it's just been this joke that I always bring up. And for me, again, it's a way of making fun of myself first. So
yeah.
To take the sting away. So if you watch my Twitter, it's mostly just people making fun of me. But it's partly because I encourage them or I set them up for a joke. Or like a big thing is they make fun of how poor I am. so that no poor and no eyebrows. Or that I have no penis. Because you never see my dick in any of my nude modeling pictures. So there's this theory that I don't have a dick.
Yeah. Like the one that you posted of you carrying the girl in the desert.
Oh, you can see the shadow.
Like, I was like.
You can, if you, on Twitter, you can see the shadow of it. But
okay.
Also, it's not
I'll
like
have
a,
to go look at that one then.
It's in its hibernating state.
Yeah. It's so interesting because you seem to be like an unintentionally a fan of radical honesty.
It's the only way I guess I can grow. I've always sort of considered myself a optimistic realist. Mm-hmm. And I try to be as real with myself as I can and as honest. And part of that, this reminds me of a story with my mom. I was watching the Academy Awards, and I was like, Mom, do you ever think I'll make it to the Academy Awards? And she looked at me. She's like, no. But it wasn't mean. It was just honest. And I always think about that. And I hate when people flatter you. It's also why it's really hard for me to take a compliment because there's so many other motives for giving a compliment. So I like to hear, I guess, one, if you make fun of me, you're my friend. And you trust me enough not to get mad that you're making fun of me. And it's just, I am fine laughing at myself, but it's just a reminder of, one of the biggest things you see in porn is these women have these inflated egos because they have a million fans on Instagram and they think they're hot shit. And of course they show up to set like 2 hours late and have these egos. So it's just a reminder of, you know, I don't know. It helps me grow. Helps me.
Mm-hmm. Makes
sense.
I
don't know if that answered your question. Just a rambling thing.
No,
but it's
okay. It was.
I tried for. Yes.
Yeah.
Rachel, do you wanna make your guess?
I already said. I think. Yeah. Wait. No. Yes. You all have met. Yes. I think you have slept together. Oh no. I feel so awful because I lost this game. I'm going to go hang my head in shame.
Yes, you should. You should. But ask us again in a year, a few months, who knows?
Yeah. Exactly. So.
Yeah. Someday, Rachel, I will just text you two words. It happened. Out of no other context, and you're gonna have to remember what that means.
So many people want to sleep with you, though. That if it's like that, is it
Adrian or me?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. How many people I don't know want to sleep personally with Chanel? That well, so so
yeah,
maybe,
not that
but
many
it
people.
Sounds like no. But a lot of people want to sleep with Adrian. Right. So it's difficult to keep track.
Look, I didn't even sleep with Colin until we'd been dating for about a year.
And you do have a very specific type.
And I mean,
I've noticed
sleep with. We had many, many sexes, but we did not sleep in a bed with each other until we've been dating for a year.
So many people want to have sex with you. Sorry, not sleep with. So many people want to have sex with you. So I lost.
It's okay.
But
I think it makes sense, though, because I feel like I fit into the category of people that she tends to like.
Mm-hmm.
From my observations.
Yes.
I'm like the Payless version of Michael Vegas.
I worked at Payless once. There's my tangent. Yeah. I worked there for 2 months when I was 17 and I quit because the assistant managers, they kept on stealing and it made me uncomfortable and they forced me to steal. They were like, now that you've stolen, you can't. Because
oh
they were
God.
Like, here. They were, I was like, that scarf's kind of cute. And they were like, here, take it. And she just put it in my bag. And then we left the store. And I was like,
oh my God, that's wild.
Yeah.
Man. So if anyone's wondering why Payless isn't like doing so hot now,
right, it's because of that store.
It's because of that one store in the mall.
Well, I can also vouch for the fact that like Hobby Lobby employees steal from Hobby Lobby because I worked at Hobby Lobby and it's a bunch of fucking teenagers who definitely are not Christian and don't give a fuck and usually just hate that company and they just steal. Right. Yeah.
So. Great.
All right. We're good. We just need to do our Patreon shout outs. And Sean, you're on social media.
I am. So
Sean Alf.
Sean Alf for everything. Yes.
Everywhere. Shawnalff.
That's right.
Posting not dick pics.
Not dick pics. You want
near,
all your
near
not dick
pics.
Pic needs. Yes, near dick pics.
And,
but who
and,
knows?
And
maybe soon dick pics.
Chaps. Pictures of you in chaps.
There's a lot of ass. I think the ass makes up for the lack
you
of
do it. Have a nice butt. Yeah.
I do work hard for it. I didn't always have a nice butt. I do a lot.
Same. But yeah, everyone listening, you can find us After Adult on Instagram, After Adult, Twitter, After Adult Pod, and please check out our Patreon, patreon.com/afteradult. For our Patreon, we have some shout outs that we'd like to do at the end of every episode for our current monthly subscribers. Rachel, can you see? It's the same as it was last time. They haven't changed for a minute.
No, I got it. I have it. So what's up, John from New Jersey?
Hey, Richard from Oklahoma.
How are you doing? Thomas from Louisiana.
Jan. I think his name is pronounced Jan from Germany. He's been a fan for a very long time.
What up, Jan?
He still emailed me, yeah.
And Kevin, I hope you're doing well from the UK. Not from the US or somewhere else. Only Kevin in the UK.
Yes.
And you also have to mention that if people go to, was it iMusic or Apple Podcasts, and they write a review of your podcast, and you get
review us on Apple Podcasts,
1,000 reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have like 92 right now, so we're about
mom,
1/10.
Rachel's mom will come on and watch Boogie Nights with you guys.
Uh-huh.
And not and only that, if they write something like "got eggs" or what is it, "no eggs." Then you'll give them a $5 gift card to anywhere. Do you remember? Am I the only one who listened to this podcast?
I don't remember what I said. No, I remember that because then I checked the reviews one day and I was like, all these reviews mention eggs.
Yeah. Just find some way to incorporate eggs into your review.
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't mentioned my mom in a while, but yeah, she'll come on and she's going to watch Boogie Nights and we'll talk about it. She's probably forgotten at this point that she agreed to that, but she did. She did.
Temper with muffins and baked goods.
No, she's trying to lose weight, so she will not do that. She won't be down for it. I can probably give her a bottle of wine, though.
Well, if it takes us like 2 years to get there, then you know she'll have had plenty of time to make those goals.
Mm-hmm.
She can indulge.
Yeah, it's a special occasion. We hit 1,000 reviews. Come on.
It's true.
Come on, Rachel's mom.
Get it together, Rachel's mom.
She doesn't listen to this. She doesn't listen to podcasts. She is ADD, so it's difficult for her to like.
It's fair.
Yeah. So.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It was so much fun. This is my first podcast ever.
Woo! We popped through.
Yay! Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on, Sean.
Yeah, thanks. This was awesome.
All right, okay,
bye.